Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by the great Mr. Vin Forte. Vin.
I'm him.
Yeah, it's you.
What? Oh my God. What was that? So, I have one question.
Please.
Why in God's name do you have not one, not two, but three cardboard Baby Yodas?
Great question. I actually have four.
Okay.
I'm giving three away and I want to keep one. I'm doing, well, all right. So the Baby Yoda life size for Baby Yoda cardboard standee came four in a pack. So I didn't buy four. I bought a pack and four is what came. And I've had all four here, but I'm getting ready to do a little bit of autumn cleaning.
Like, is it just Baby Yoda, or is it like is it like an advertising standee? Is he promoting Coors Light? Like,
no, it's just Baby Yoda. Kind of like Zach Morris had Kelly Kapowski standee. He's just a little Baby Yoda. You could just stand up in your room.
Now, the amount of things in Saved by the Bell that would not fly today.
Yeah, that's a pretty cancelable offense.
Like, do you like this cardboard cutout I made of you that hang in my room?
By the way, what Vin was referencing was, I'm trying to get rid of some of this stuff because when you have a collection, at some point it always gets a little bit too much, and then you kind of want to pare down. So I realized, you know what? I don't need four Baby Yoda standees. So I put on the old Facebook. Does anyone want one of these goddamn Baby Yodas? And Saved by the Bell. Lots of problems. I mean, Zach Morris should be the poster boy for white privilege.
Oh, yeah. Like, he takes advantage of everyone in that show.
There's no system that he does not mock. There's no moral that he...
There's no handicap woman that he will not try and get with and try and curry sympathy with.
Yeah. There is no nerd he will not pick on. Although he would treat nerds like minions. He'd be like, come, nerds, do my bidding.
Oh, yeah. He'd be like, oh, my mom's going to be home. Hey, nerds, fix my dad's car right now.
Yeah. You think he made Screech Frost his tips?
Oh, I think he made Screech do a lot of stuff.
Oh, God. Stuff you don't even want to know.
God, I mean, knowing what we know now about Screech later in life. I've seen the tape. You've seen the tape, right?
I haven't seen the tape, but I've read a description of the quote-unquote porno tape.
Yeah. Do you remember when Screech was on, this is the saddest moment ever, when Screech was on Howard Stern?
Yes.
And he was selling Screech shirts, but he didn't have the rights to the name Screech. So he was selling them with like Screech with three E's in it.
Yeah. That was a sad, I remember also Howard Stern called him Screech and he was like, oh, I guess I should call you by your real name. And he's like, no, you could call me Screech if you want. It's real sad.
Didn't he box someone?
Betty did. In celebrity boxing, he boxed
Bonaducci?
Horshack.
Oh, Horshack.
From Welcome Back, Kotter, who was the Screech of his day.
Oh, that's right. He got the crap beaten out of him.
Yeah, Screech lost?
No, Screech won, and that was like such a shock that he was like deadly serious.
Well, he's gotta have like 20 years on fucking Horshack.
That's true. Horshack though is just an easy payday. Like, I'm gonna come in and I'm gonna box you.
For the young kids that listen, Horshack was a nerd character on a 70s sitcom called Welcome Back, Kotter. Ask your parents. Ask your grandparents.
Yeah, he was a sweat hog.
Kind of like a gang.
Yeah, but it was also like detention. They never really did any work.
No, they didn't. They just sort of fucked around.
It'd be like if you were really close with your homeroom teacher, which no one is.
Right. Right.
Like, it's like a negligible, like, you're not even my real teacher.
Yeah, and then he was also in Horshack, Ron Perillo?
Something like that.
He had a small role in Friday the 13th, Jason Lives, where Jason ripped his heart out.
Mmm. Imitating life once again.
Yeah. By the way, the best Jason movie. I've said it before, I'll say it again.
Really? Why do you like Jason Lives so much?
It's the only one that is self-aware of what it's doing. It's the only one that has a decent director. It's the only one. It's just whatever it is to make a Jason movie, this was the only time that the people behind it had a handle on it.
It's what Dream Warriors is to Nightmare on Elm Street.
I'll say yes, but to be honest with you, I have not rewatched Dream Warriors in, I'm going to say, 15 years.
Honestly, the one I've seen the most is the second one, because people can't believe how blatantly homoerotic it is, and I just keep showing it to them.
Yes, there's a whole episode of PCMC on Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. By the way, there's a line from the trailer, and I don't know why. It's stuck in my head forever, and it's that he's not around anymore, but he did, like, horror movie voiceover, and it's this guy like, "Someone is coming back to Elm Street. He is not friendly." I don't know why. It's stuck in my head forever.
He's not. I can't hear in the chair like, "He's not a friendly man.
Someone is coming back to Elm Street." Let's do some news. There's lots of news.
Oh, you bet there is.
And by that, I mean pop culture news. I don't want to hear nothing about no vaccines or nothing.
No. I mean, we all don't believe. I mean, come on.
Come on.
We're all on the same page.
Absolutely. I wear a mask, but people don't know I poke little holes in it.
Yeah.
No
cootie shots for me.
Like it's a condom and I'm trying to get somebody pregnant. This is all for humor. Okay, so Super Mario 3D All-Stars. Oh, boy.
And you, lucky you, you just got a Switch.
Oh, you fucking bet I did. I'll get more into that during the obsession. But I am very excited because, well, the Mario All-Star title has been around, what, since the Super days? Because wasn't the first All-Stars like the original three on Super Nintendo?
It was the original three and the Lost Levels.
Yes.
Which was the real Mario 2.
Right.
That was too hard for Americans.
Right, because the real Mario 2, which we call Lost Levels, was literally the exact same game and gameplay. It's literally like level one would be the next level. So it just begins hard.
It's an expansion pack.
Basically. But now they're doing Super Mario 3D All-Stars. I was confused by the title because what they mean by 3D is not a side-scroller. Like
the 3D Mario game.
Right, it's not Nintendo DS 3D that comes out at you. Yeah, so it's going to be Mario 64, which, oh my God, what a classic. Oh, the amount of hours of my life I spent playing that and finding every star just so I can see Yoshi for a second.
Well, the brilliance of that game, because I've been replaying it on emulation, illegal, ooh. Uh-oh. I know. And the brilliance of that game is that it was open enough that if you found something too hard, you could just go and do a different star.
Right. Because it was kind of like you need a certain amount of stars to get to Bowser and beat the narrative, but then there was a lot more stars to get.
Yeah, you needed, I think, like 70 total or like 60, something like that.
Right.
And then there were 120 stars.
Right. And what happened was when you got 120, you can there was like you can go behind the castle or you can be, I forget how you get there. You get shot up there.
Yeah, there's a warp pipe outside that's like clearly gated up.
Right.
And you're able to access that warp pipe and it shoots you to the top of the castle where there's Yoshi and you can't do anything with Yoshi.
No, he just says, "What's up?"
Yeah, he's just like, "Hey, what's going on? I'm just chilling."
But this is before YouTube. People talked about this, and it was just like, you almost didn't believe it. Could it be true? You were dying to see it.
Yeah, and it was true. And recently, so, like, they're still finding new stuff. They, like, found something in the source code where, like, Luigi was originally supposed to be in the game. There's an actual, like, model of Luigi that they made.
Really? So, yeah, so this 3D All-Star is Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Mario Galaxy, which Mario Galaxy, to me, is, if you want a sequel to Mario 64, that's where it is. It's basically the same kind of mechanics, the same kind of gameplay, same kind of narrative. And that was the sort of premier Mario title for the Wii when it came out.
Yeah.
Now, the one that I only played very little and I couldn't get into was Mario Sunshine, but I know it's got its fans.
It's a very good game. It's just people weren't expecting it.
Well, it's also one of these games where it was created and then Nintendo was like, oh, let's make this a Mario game.
Yeah, I don't know if that, I haven't heard that story, but I definitely know, like, they definitely took a different approach of it.
Yes, it's kind of different kind of mechanics and stuff, right? He's got the backpack.
Yeah, you get the backpack that you could, like, shoot water. Basically, you're there to, like, clean up an island. And there's also, like, a very well-defined theme.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's all tropical. And that game, you can ride Yoshi.
And that was the GameCube title, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of people are going to go back thanks to this collection, and they're going to really love Mario Sunshine.
Well, that's the one I'm kind of excited to sort of get my teeth on, because I it's the one I haven't played. You know, like, of course I'm going to play 64 because it was a classic that I played so much, but Sunshine is really like the new title.
Yeah, the only real knock I personally have on it, and it's not even really a knock, it's just because it was the GameCube, I guess, they tried voice acting for a lot of the characters. Mario still doesn't speak, but pretty much everyone else has, like, real voices.
No.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Like, you hear, like, at first it's okay, because Princess Peach, like, okay, they gave her the voice you would expect. But then, like, you hear Bowser talking near the end of the game.
No.
Yeah, it's just like, no, nope, don't like this.
They work best in that kawaii kind of, like, we say a few things.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, like, real dialogue. Almost like the way the Legos talk in the Lego video games. Yeah. Like, it just, like, it's kind of a sort of, how to put it, a brief sort of suggestion of language.
Right. And now, because you just got a Switch, the game you really should get is Mario Odyssey.
I am going to get that. That is because probably
If you want a true sequel to Mario 64.
And I do.
This is that. Because it does the same kind of thing where, you know, you enter a big world and you collect moons instead of stars, but you can, like, collect any moon that you want. And there are different, like there are points in each world that sort of, like, guide you along the narrative.
Yeah.
So that you get, like, you know, the 8 or so moons that you need. But it's so, like, free and open. And it does the thing that we were just talking about where, you know, once you beat the game, like, it's a very tight game if you're just playing to follow the narrative. Like, you can beat it pretty quick. But when you beat it, you unlock all these extra moons. So it's like, now right. You can go back and there's, like, a whole, like, second game to play almost.
Right. So Super Mario 3D All-Stars is released September 18. It's already sold out on pre-order for Amazon. And Nintendo is saying, without giving any specifics, that this is a limited time release.
Yeah, only till March.
Yeah, and even in their eShop, it's only until March. So, yeah,
but that's the good thing, though. So if you can't get the pre-order, like, you can still download it in the eShop.
Right, exactly. So you'll be able to get your hands on it, but not forever. What do you think they're doing that, by the way?
I think they're trying to pull a Disney vault.
Okay.
Because they know people want it.
Yeah.
Like, this has been a big thing for a long time. People have been like, can we have this?
Right. Okay, so moving on to our next story. And this is one that really surprised me. Sacha Baron Cohen made a Borat sequel and even has been screening it for people. Blows my mind.
Yeah, I heard it might be meta, too, where it's like the making of a Borat movie.
Well, there's very little that's known about it. I read on Collider that because Sacha Baron Cohen and the character Borat are so well known, Borat in the movie is famous, so Borat, the character, has to disguise himself. So there's that sort of, there's two levels there of Borat's disguising himself, but also Sacha Baron Cohen is. Can you believe that in 2020, someone made a movie in secret? Like, that's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, this is the year to do it.
Right. I mean, the only thing that I heard was somebody, I think, on Twitter captured some footage of Borat, like, driving down a street. And this was a couple months ago, but nobody knew it was going to be a feature movie. People thought, oh, it could be anything, any bit. You know what I mean? Now, the original Borat came out in 2006, which is a long time ago now.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I'll still say I can't remember ever laughing harder or being in a theater where people laughed harder. It truly was like riotous the way people reacted to it.
Well, the secret of movies like that, and I would put the first Jackass movie up there as well, mm-hmm. is that unlike a scripted movie where you're banking on people laughing, you're just sort of like hoping that it hits, you can really get as much footage as you want. You're like, okay, we know what works, and you could really load up the movie with like crowd pleasers.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Now, in the case of Borat, it would be interesting to go back and give it a full watch and see the stuff that maybe doesn't work today.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Well, that's sort of my question, which is, in a time of sort of extreme wokeness, will a Borat movie work? Or is it, will he be canceled, or is he uncancelable? You know, I think, when the first movie came out, representatives of the actual country, Kazakhstan, were like, nothing of what he says is anything like our country. He just picked a random name and made up this character. I mean, Borat is just a vague,
Eastern European.
Right. Like, he sort of works for people that don't know geopolitics.
Yeah. Like, he works for the everyman, which, right. I mean, that's the point. But then...
But who's going to... Will people still have an appetite for it? You know, or will it have a different audience? Because originally Borat was very, what used to be considered liberal, because a lot of who he was mocking were conservatives. And, there's that famous scene in the first movie where he's with those fucking douchey frat bros, and they're kind of like, they don't realize that they're in a movie. Will liberals like this movie, or will conservatives like it because, free speech and so on and so forth?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I want it to come out just to see. I think you can do that kind of comedy. But, it's a fine line, because I think I'd have to kind of go back and give the first movie a good critical eye,
right,
in 2020, because there's definitely stuff in it that I know works.
And there's some stuff that's so outrageous, you think, well, it's satire, like, the character, right,
but then you have
anti-Semitic.
Well, I was just going to bring that up, like, something like that with him being like, ah, the Jews, like,
right.
Would that be seen as satire now, or would that be seen as like, hey man, why so many digs at the Jews?
Right, right. Satire or not, you're saying language that we don't want to hear.
Yeah, well, not even that you don't want to hear, but like, that could be a dog whistle now.
Right, which is true, right? I mean, how many people watched the original Borat and were laughing with Borat, not at Borat? You know what I mean? We're like, yeah.
That's where some Borat works. Like, well, it's the Archie Bunker thing, and it's also throw the Jew down the well.
Oh, it's so
like,
crazy.
Like, that's a good example of Borat, where, like, it's so extreme that it's like, it smashes right past even the inference of being a dog whistle. It can't.
Right.
There's no way it could be a dog whistle. It's just so ridiculous.
Who knows? I'd bet any amount of money that this is, it's being financed and will be released by a streaming service.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's got to be Netflix or somebody who paid for it.
Yeah.
Because that's just, I feel like they don't even make movies like that anymore.
No, and I don't think, again, I don't know if the appetite is there.
Right. I mean, everything about this is surprising, because if you had told me in 2008 there was a new Borat movie coming out, I'd say, yeah, of course. But here we are. 14 years later, after he did a Bruno movie, which, talk about, if that movie came out now, talk about canceled. And then he did The Dictator. Was that him?
Yeah, The Dictator, which flopped.
Right, right. And I'm trying to think what else. And
then he kind of showed up in stuff.
Right, he's done acting in other things. I'm trying to think of, were there any other big things that were his?
He had that series that, or he did a season of it like last year on Showtime.
What was that?
That was another.
Right. That was a Borat, right? Wasn't he?
No, it wasn't Borat, but it was like another
sketch show.
Yeah, where like he would go places and sort of do like political pranks on people.
Do you remember? Wasn't there something where like there was a spy and he was the brother of a spy, like half brother. Maybe Jason Statham. I'm thinking,
I know exactly what you're talking about. The brothers Grimby, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Oh well, I mean, I'll watch it. We'll see what happens. So the last piece of news I want to talk about is some really interesting remarks that John Boyega said recently. John Boyega, who plays Finn in the Star Wars sequels, sort of, he was interviewed and he said some interesting shit about the sequels and his character in the sequels and Disney in general.
And he's unloading a full clip into Star Wars.
I know. I mean, there's something very brave about him just fucking putting it out there. You know, one thing he says is that, and this is something I've heard of, I've kind of heard this in Hollywood in general, that the makeup and hair people didn't know how to work with African-American hair. And he said, like, his makeup or his hair person, like, really didn't know, like, what to do with him or how to cut his hair.
Hire a black person. Like,
it's crazy, right? It's crazy that that could be a problem. But he also said, you know, this is a quote for him. What I would say to Disney is do not bring out a black character. Market them to be much more important in the franchise than they are, and then have them pushed to the side. He's totally right. But there's something else. There's a couple other things there. One is that they did this really shitty thing where they were afraid to admit that the protagonist of the movie was a female. So a lot of the early marketing is trying to make it like he's the star. Even on the poster, he's the one holding the lightsaber because he does hold the lightsaber in the film. But you put him on the poster like that, it looks like he's the Jedi.
Right, which it made, again, like, it, and that wasn't just in the first movie. Like, in the second movie, they made that connection, too.
Right. You know what? He's absolutely right. And I would never, I'm not defending Disney. But I would say that Disney didn't know what to do with any of them. They didn't know what to do with Finn, but they also didn't know what to do with Rey or Poe or Chewbacca or Luke. We've talked about this before. The whole, you know, sequel series is just fucking, it's like a Ouija board. They're just sort of like poking in the dark for anything.
It's a mess in retrospect.
It's crazy. You know, Force Awakens is a strong pilot, especially because it's just a throwback kind of remake of the original.
Right.
The second one, The Last Jedi, I think is absolutely brilliant. I'm a huge Last Jedi stan. But I also can admit that The Last Jedi doesn't know how to be a sequel to The Force Awakens. So it just
Well, that's the thing. There was no blueprint. Like, it's genuinely shocking that the same company that planned out the 10-year, you know, Marvel Cinematic Universe could not get a solid blueprint down before they did 3 Star Wars movies.
Yeah. It shows the weirdness of Hollywood, and it's like so much money is put into this, yet the planning only goes so far.
And that third movie was not
good.
That wasn't it. Yeah.
Something that he said that I kind of didn't agree with, and I'm trying to find the quote, is he talking about the series in general.
Oh, let's hear it. I didn't hear this.
Oh, damn. I can't seem to find the quote. Basically, he said, you know, JJ wasn't supposed to come back for the third one, but you guys fucked it up, so he had to come back. Which kind of upset me, because I was like, ah, even you don't like The Last Jedi, dude. Like, The Last Jedi is awesome, and you're kind of cool in it. You know, like, even he's a Last Jedi hater. And whether or not...
I get what he's saying, because I don't know if he directed that at the director. I think, I suspect he meant more what we're all thinking, which is that it's more like, I can't believe that you didn't have a plan. Like, I can't believe you let a different director come in and do his own thing, and now you're making a third movie, and you're like, oh, we got to correct this? Why would you have to correct it?
Right. But, and of course, they don't correct it, though. I think bringing in JJ ended up being a really bad idea. And bad ideas happen when you make choices out of fear, which, as we said when we talked about it on PCMC, to me, it's such a horrible way to end that series, because Star Wars is all about weird, bold choices. Even the prequels, as bad as they can be, are just huge swings at doing whatever the fuck they want to do. So to end this sort of classic series with an episode 9 that is just timid and afraid and kowtowing to the audience is just like, wow, talk about like not in the spirit of George Lucas.
Kowtowing, but also doing weird changes that don't make sense, like the Emperor having a bunch of clones.
Yeah, you can't help but, I don't know, we can't re-litigate this. But it is, getting back to the story in general, good for John Boyega. I mean, that takes balls to be like, you know what, you fucked up. You didn't know what to do with my character. You didn't know what to do with this series.
Well, it's very reminiscent of when Shia LaBeouf criticized the last Indiana Jones movie.
Right.
And then Steven Spielberg like tried to pull him aside and was like, don't do that. Like, hey, you don't do that in this business. Like, you know, you don't get work that way. Like, you got to take the paycheck. Like, sometimes it's not about art.
Right.
And it like blew his mind, because he was like, this is Steven Spielberg telling me that like it's not about the art. You got to take the money and
right.
do what they say.
Do you think that Shia LaBeouf is a weird character? But that was one of the first things that made him an outcast. Do you think that John Boyega might also become a sort of outsider figure?
No, because I think that he's playing it very cool. I think that people are going to want him in their projects.
Yeah. You know, in supposedly in one of the versions of the script for 9, he starts a sort of a stormtrooper rebellion. Like, he gets other stormtroopers to flip and turn against the Empire, which would have been such a good way to finish his story.
Yeah, instead of having him do absolutely nothing.
Right, kind of just be like Rey's lackey. Because they also never develop a love story that's clearly set up in The Force Awakens.
Or in The Last Jedi. Like, there were two different... You gave him two different love interests.
Right. Well, of course, but JJ had to, you know, he had to get rid of Kelly Marie Tran and make her a nothing character.
Right.
He had to Jar Jar her. Well, what a movie.
The Mandalorian 2.
That's going to be good. It's coming, what, the day before Halloween.
Perfect timing.
Today I was in Target and I saw a Baby Yoda, like, Ben Cooper mask.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like, with the cheap string in the back and stuff. I was like, whoa. It was a little bit scary, but...
Now, you're a Baby Yoda fan. Do you feel that we've hit the saturation point?
Oh, fuck yes. I was in Staples recently, and I saw they had a little stand with Baby Yoda hand sanitizer.
What?
Yeah. All those words... I said, when the show came out, people wanted Baby Yoda toys and Baby Yoda stuff, and there wasn't any. And then they overcorrected. So now, months later, when the show is still a great show, but the Baby Yoda meme or phase has sort of died, now there's a million Baby Yoda dolls, Baby Yoda toys, Baby Yoda bed sets.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Baby Yoda hand sanitizer.
Yeah, Baby Yoda, there's Baby Yoda everything.
This is kind of gross.
There's Baby Yoda Monopoly, Baby Yoda, it just goes on and on and on and on.
Frozen 2 hand sanitizer? This is like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, it's weird. It's the weird world we live in.
I do like this art that someone made of Baby Yoda trying to open a thing of Purell.
Yeah. Look, maybe when Mandalorian Season 2 comes out, this will be reignited. But I'm really afraid that they're going to turn Baby Yoda into the Urkel of Mandalorian.
Mm.
Like, I really hope they just go with whatever the plan was, and it's not just for real the Baby Yoda show.
Yeah.
Because Baby Yoda's adorable, but he's the MacGuffin. He's not the character. And he's cute because he's a puppet, and you see him not often. So if it becomes all Baby Yoda all the time, it's going to be not great.
Yeah, well, there was that rumor that they were going to murder Baby Yoda.
What? What are you talking about?
That was a rumor, right?
I didn't hear that. This is a bit. Yeah,
no, they were going to murder Baby Yoda and it was going to surprise everyone.
Yeah, it'll surprise Disney when everyone cancels their fucking Disney Plus. And every child in the world cries. Oh my God. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with a chill sesh. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Buongiorno. I'm joined by Vin Forte.
Whoa.
He's excited.
And I am.
I am too. You should be too, listener, because PCMC is a podcast that comes out every Wednesday, and we're available anywhere podcasts can be found. I want you to stop for a moment and imagine a place where podcasts can be found.
Where they just roam free in the plains.
Yes. Well, Vin, I long for the day where I retire. And I can drive PCMC up into the country and let it have a nice home with a farm family.
Take PCMC out to stud.
Yeah. Just let it out and, you know, tie it up to a tree like Old Yeller and put it to sleep.
It's kind of got away from us.
I don't know where this metaphor went. But PCMC comes out every Wednesday. This is the chill sesh. This is the shish where we chill and we just talk. Vin, what are you doing? Are you reading anything or watching anything? Anything cool going on in your little world there?
Well, what's going on with me is dental health, which is something that I cannot stress enough to people.
Dental health. Now, yes. Is that a graphic novel?
No, that is a real-world thing.
Oh, I see.
I got a root canal this week.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, but I'm glad that you're going to be doing better.
Yeah, no, it was not. People have one idea of what a root canal is.
Yes.
And I think it scares a lot of people away.
Right, because from what I understand, and I've never had one, they drill into your fucking, like, nerves and shit. It's oral surgery.
Kinda. It took 10 minutes.
Oh.
And I didn't feel a thing. And then when my mouth, it was all a setup. Don't brush your teeth.
Brush your teeth is for pussies.
Yeah, fuck that. So what they do is they basically, it doesn't mean that your teeth are necessarily rotten either.
Right. Yeah. Cause you never struck me as someone with particularly bad teeth.
Yeah, no, they're not. And what it means is, like, I was having a pain in my tooth for the last month.
That's the worst.
And here's the thing, because you always hear some dentists are good, some are bad. I went to a bad dentist last week because I was just about to get dental insurance this month.
Yeah. So
let me take care of this. It's coinciding with this pain in my tooth. Perfect timing.
Yeah.
So I go see this dentist in my neighborhood, right down the block from you, in fact. So don't go to this jerk off.
I think I know who you're talking about. No, I've never gone there.
Yeah, well, don't, because I went there and they took an x-ray of my tooth. One x-ray.
Yeah.
$130.
Oof.
And they said, they show me the x-ray. I'm going to come back to this part in a minute, but for now, they just show me the x-ray and they go, oh, yeah, you see, like, your entire tooth is black. I'm like, yeah, it is, but what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, that's rot. We might have to take that tooth out.
Wow.
And in my head, I'm just like, but it's only been hurting for the past month. Like,
yeah.
Wouldn't you think like there'd be something going on like years in advance? Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah.
So they tell me, well, okay, we might be able to do a root canal. But we might still have to take the tooth out. So they tell me all that. And then they tell me what the cost of the root canal is.
Yeah.
And they're like, it's going to be $800 for this. And then we got to, it's going to be another like $700 to put a cap on it and fill it up. And I'm like, what the fuck?
And dental insurance sucks. Even if you have dental insurance, anything other than a teeth cleaning, they fucking consider extra and fuck you.
Right. That's why you got to have a good dentist that actually, like, cares about you. Because your dentist could tell you, look, you need a lot of work done with your teeth, but I know you don't have a lot of money, so we're just going to do it, and I'm going to give you this price, and that's it. And then some dentists will really try and rip you off and be like, well, no, look, it's either $2,000 or that, or, you know, you can go somewhere else, buddy. So this dentist was really trying to nickel and dime me. So then I talked to someone in my family, and they're like, no, no, you should go to this person. Like, this person's much better.
Mm-hmm.
They did a bunch of dental work for, you know, our family, blah, blah, blah. So I go to this new dentist. It's like night and day.
Oh, yeah?
Like, this like I walked in, the guy knew exactly what I was talking about when it came to my tooth. He took an x-ray.
Yeah.
And I realized after I left the other day what the first dentist had done. Because when this new dentist showed me the x-ray,
mm-hmm.
there was just a little sort of like pocket or spot like on the side of my tooth. And that's where it was coming from.
Uh-huh.
So there was like, there was a little bit of something going on there that he just needed to clean out and do the root canal for.
Right.
It was not the entire tooth. Now, when I going back to the first dentist, what they did is when they showed me the x-ray, the light that they put on like behind the x-ray so you can see it, they dimmed that light. So it made it seem like the entire tooth was black. So you couldn't like see it fully illuminated.
Whoa. Really?
Yeah, because when this guy showed it to me, it was like fully bright and you could clearly see. It's just like a little like spot on the tooth.
Right.
And so that first person was clearly trying to rip me off. But going back to the original point of what exactly a root canal is, they do drill into your tooth, but again, you don't feel it. They put two shots of Novocaine directly into your gums, and then like almost immediately you start to feel like numb, so you just don't feel anything.
Right.
Then they do drill into your tooth, but again, you don't feel anything, and they take out the nerve, and they fill that cavity where the nerve was back up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the secondary part, and that's the end of the root canal. And then now I have to go back, and they go back in because the nerve was being basically like affected by the little like part that was like screwed up in my tooth. So now it doesn't hurt because they've taken the root out and they filled it up. So there's just no nerve there. Like if you were a deranged billionaire, you could theoretically just get root canals in all your teeth. And they would never hurt ever again.
If you were a deranged billionaire.
Yeah. But so basically what I have to do now is like, it's filled up for now, but in 2 weeks I have to go back because they're going to clean out the part that's like a cavity and they're going to put a crown on it.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I hate to sound like a conspiracy theorist or like one of these crazy people who thinks the world is flat or that COVID is fake. But I'm sure there are good dentists out there, but I've had myself run-ins with bad dentists where it really does feel like that car mechanic thing where it's like, there's something small wrong here, but you just want to add shit on and add shit on and milk as much out of my insurance or out of me as possible.
Oh, yeah. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were saying how they used to go to a dentist all the time, and every time they would go, the dentist would like magically find a new cavity, and then they switched dentists and all of a sudden they had the best teeth in the world.
You know, one time I was supposed to get a root canal. This was a good dentist that I liked, but when I went to get my root canal, the dentist like took some x-rays and was like, huh. And then he took some more. And then there was some discussion and it wasn't beginning. And I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And then he came in and he was like, all right, I'm going to take this hammer and I'm going to bang on all of your teeth with this hammer.
What?
Yeah. And he was like, tell me what you feel. And he literally did that for every tooth. And I didn't feel anything. And then he was like, all right, I think there was a mistake. I don't think you need a root canal. And he looked at the original x-ray and he was like, yeah, I guess it's a shadow. I guess it was a bad x-ray. Our bad. And then I got to go home.
I mean, good, but
it was weird.
Weird.
It was weird. And I had a whole week of being like freaked out, afraid of it. And it was weird. And then I think after that, I believe there was a fight. I mean, a fight, but I wasn't a part of it between my insurance and them. Cause I think my insurance was like, we're not paying for nothing. And they were like, please pay us. And I don't know what happened, if eventually they paid or it went back and forth so much that the dentist gave up and I ended up paying nothing. But it was a weird. The whole thing was odd. It was also across the street from a cemetery. So while you're in the fucking root canal room, you look through, you look through the window at the cemetery, and it's like, well, this doesn't seem like the best idea.
No,
this was, someone should have thought of this. So you're in good dental health now?
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, they haven't checked my entire mouth, but it was, it's crazy because it was just that one tooth that was the problem, but it was making like that whole side of my mouth, like where the gums are, feel like it was like throbbing and in pain.
I know, it's the worst. I thought when I had shingles a month ago, I thought maybe there was something wrong with my jaw or teeth because shingles fucks with your nerves. So, like, I had pain in my eye and pain in my teeth and pain in my jaw and my ear. I was like, do I have a toothache? Do I have an earache? Is my eye going to explode? It's the worst. Any pain in the head is sucks. Oh, it's the worst. Earaches are terrible.
Oh, God.
Oh, fucking earaches. You know, it's like, sometimes you got to stop and be like, thank God I'm not currently in pain. Because pain really puts a pause on everything else in your petty life. Like, God, pain is the worst.
Oh, yeah. Like, the second that root canal was over and, like, the Novocaine was wearing off, it was such a relief. Like, it was the best I'd felt in months.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so the second dentist, what did it end up costing you?
Well, my insurance had not kicked in yet, so... Hopefully it will kick in for when the crown is there and everything, but out of pocket, it was $700.
Okay. I mean, I guess that's not a bad price to...
To save your tooth? Yeah.
To get out of pain.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like...
Yeah.
To get out of pain, it was like, yeah, yep, just take it, whatever.
Right. Well, now that you have no pain stopping you, have you been reading or watching or playing anything?
I've been playing my Switch. I've been playing the SNES Online component to the Switch, and that's been really fun.
How does that work? Is it a subscription?
It's a subscription. You have to. It comes with the Switch Online, so you pay $20 for the whole year.
Okay, that's not bad.
And with that, you get a couple apps that are like Netflix style, and they're for NES and SNES.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically, like, if you go into the SNES one, it's got a bunch of like box art of games, and you just click the box art and then you're playing the game. Wow. But they've added online play to a bunch of the games. So like you could go into like Super Mario Kart and like we could be playing it right now.
Oh, I gotta do this. 20 for a year is pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about Switch before. I'm not sure if the next game I get is going to be Mario Galaxy or Super Mario Maker 2.
Oh, Mario Maker 2 is great.
Yeah, I know you've talked about it a lot, and I...
That's worth it for the online.
Okay.
Right, like that you would need to get the online for.
You could play levels other people made.
Yeah. Again, I have Mario Maker 2. I have not even touched the actual, like, Maker section of it.
Wow. I just love the idea that the elements of the original Mario can become a medium that other people can work in.
Well, Nintendo is really, like, it was free money to them, basically, in a way, because for years, people have been making ROM hacks and different, you know, making their own Mario levels out of the original, like, ROMs.
Right, true.
So this is just Nintendo, like, getting in on the action.
Right. And they have a history of, like, things like that, like Mario Paint. They've got a nice history of, like, creative stuff.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, you can't go wrong with either of them. I would say if you had to get one, you're already resigning yourself to eventually getting the Mario All-Stars pack when it comes out.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So you're going to have your, like, 3D Mario fix.
You bet.
So I guess, like, get Mario Maker 2.
Okay.
Because that's just a good, like, you just come home from work on, like, a Friday night, and you pop it in, and you got infinite Marios. You spend a whole night playing people's, like, really creative Mario. Like, have you been looking up online, like, videos of some of the levels people have made?
Yeah, well, there's that one that kind of went viral of the lady or dude who made that level that's just all the fucking fire. I don't know what you call it, like the fire strips that, yeah. you know, in the regular game, it's the sort of fire strip and it goes in a circle and you kind of have to run under it or jump over it. And they just made a level that has just a million of them. And then they do a speed run, which, but I wouldn't get anywhere in that level. I would die instantly, but yeah. They do a fucking speed run where they go through and it just watching it gives you anxiety. You're like,
Well, the cool thing with people who make Mario levels, not that there aren't like really bad ones and you can like filter a lot of that out, but in order to upload a Mario level, you have to be able to beat it.
Oh, that's really interesting and smart, because then you don't have just bullshit nonsense. Kobayashi Maru's.
Right, exactly.
Kids, Kobayashi Maru is a test that has, you can't answer it. You can't. It's a Star Trek reference. So, well, right now I'm playing Luigi's Mansion 3. I beat the game, but now I'm going back and trying to get all the gems and basically doing that thing like we were just talking about where, you know, one of the things that I think Mario games are known for is just being full of replayability and secrets and little things to uncover. So I'm kind of just trying to go through and get it all because I beat the game, but then after I beat the narrative, I was given a C score. And I was like, oh, I got to get a fucking A.
Yeah.
I refuse to get a C on this game. So now I'm kind of just going through. I'm not the kind of person that is anal and like needs the 100% a game, because that can be impossible sometimes. But I do want to feel like I got my money out of it.
Yeah.
But I should say Switch and Luigi's Mansion 3 was a gift from my wonderful, beautiful girlfriend, Jen Luttrell. Just an amazing, amazing gift. Let me ask you, since we're talking about Switch, do you play it handheld?
Oh, yeah.
I rarely do. Maybe I'm old and my eyesight's bad, but the screen's just not big enough, even though it's a pretty big screen.
Yeah, I can see. I mean, there's some games that I definitely prefer playing docked in.
Yeah.
Like Zelda, I would want to play docked in.
Yeah, I find myself very rarely playing it, you know.
I think it's a brilliant system. I think, like, there's a reason that it's selling, like, beyond Nintendo's wildest expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, no, the Switch is a genuine, like, smash hit.
Yeah, it really is. And it's wonderful. I'm trying.
And they've done a brilliant thing as well, which is they know that not a lot of people bought the Wii U, but that there were a lot
of... I still don't even know what the Wii U was. Was that right. A system or was that an add-on to a system?
No, it was a fully fledged system, and it was a lot of market confusion because of that. But there were a lot of great old
Wii U then. Like,
I don't know.
It was
they were trying to still capitalize on the name of the Wii.
So, but it was its own system. So
yes.
This isn't the next generation from Wii. This is two generations next.
Right. Exactly. This is the system after the Wii U.
I don't even know what the Wii U looks like. I can't even imagine it in my head.
Yeah, well, now you know what the problem with the Wii U was. But the fact remains, there were a lot of great games on the Wii U.
Is that
and
true?
What they, yeah, and what they've been doing...
Oh, was the Wii U handheld?
The Wii U had a handheld controller, but it was like a tablet, which was another thing that was like... That it was sort of like, you're close. Like, you've almost got a good idea.
Oh, you can see it's almost like the Switch idea. It's like a step before the Switch idea.
Right. It's like not quite there. Like could have used some more time in the oven.
Did you have one?
No. And a lot of people didn't. But again, like, when the Wii U was out, like, I saw there was some really good games for it. And what they've been doing is slowly but surely, they've been trickling out updated versions with, like, some new content here and there, like, re-releasing a lot of the Wii U games on the Switch. So, even if you just buy, you know, like, a couple new Switch games at launch, you've now also got a lot of these games that you didn't play before on the Wii U.
Yeah.
That are now coming out on the Switch. Like one of the Mario games they just announced mm-hmm. was Mario 3D World, which was the big Mario game on the Wii U, but obviously not as many people played it. So now
Oh, is that the one that they just put out a trailer for? And it comes with like Bowser's Revenge or whatever the fuck?
Yeah.
So that was a Wii U game.
That was the big Mario game on the Wii U.
Ah, okay. Because I was wondering, okay. Well, you know, this is the 35th anniversary of Mario. So this is a big year. You've got all of these games coming out. You've got the whole Lego Mario system and add-ons. And also just Mario toys in general. You go like down a toy aisle in Target, there are Mario dolls and figures. It's a weird, just a huge push for Mario, which is awesome.
Yeah, Mario's back. I mean, he never left, but like...
He's back, baby.
Yeah. Italians are hot again.
Yeah.
Bob Hoskins is... He was alive. Ooh.
Yeah. What's funny is he didn't even know it was a video game till like into shooting.
Right.
They were shooting and they were like, yeah, this... Can you believe this is based on a video game? And he was like, what now? He's like, what? I'm just going to start drinking and be drunk through this whole process.
Yeah, I'm going to get drunk and accidentally break my hand and they're going to have to put a cast on me and it
right. paint over. Although that's Leguizamo's fault. Because Leguizamo was drunk driving because he was getting Leguizamo drunk too.
He was a good influence on everyone.
Yeah. But you know what? I fucking love that movie.
I love it. It's my favorite, like, quote-unquote bad movie.
You know, if this is the year of Mario, where's the fucking big re-release of that? Come on, let's get a...
There is a re-release of it with, like, all sorts of documentaries and bonus footage.
Where?
In Germany.
What? Germans love David Hasselhoff. Have you heard all the crazy stories? Like, the directors were so reviled that the crew made up t-shirts that said, like, fuck the director, and they all wore it. Almost like a mutiny.
Yeah, and how the director like threw coffee on an extra.
Right. The directors of the Mario movie were famous. You know what they're famous for, right?
Oh, I forgot. They created
Max Headroom.
Yes, they created Max Headroom.
Which is a weird dystopian 80s.
But once you know that.
It makes sense.
Right.
Because
they basically made Mario Blade Runner.
Right. It's so weird. Oh, but I love it.
I love the set design in that movie.
I always wish they had gone back and then made a video game of that movie. Like, a game of that. That would be insane.
Someone's got to make that.
Yeah.
Did you give the final boss, Dennis Hopper?
Oh, so good.
The giant Goombas that dance?
Did I ever tell you my Dennis Hopper story?
Yes, that you were his chauffeur.
Right, me and a friend were interning on this shitty movie, which I don't think ever came out, and he was in it, and, like, our job was to, like, drive him to his hotel, and we were, like, me and my friend so nervous, and we were like, what do we do? What do we say? And I was like, Sally was driving, so I was like, do I sit in the front? Do I sit in the back? Do I let him sit wherever he wants? And, He ended up just being the nicest guy. I mean, I guess this isn't much of a juicy story.
Yeah.
But basically, I was like, where would you like to sit, sir? And he was like, I don't care. Where do you want to sit? Whatever. I don't care. And then so I sat in the back and he sat in the front. And me and Sally were just like super quiet. And then we're on the fucking BQE. And fucking Dennis Hopper's just like pointing out buildings. Like, I knew the guy who made that building. Yeah, he used to work over. Like, he was just chatting with us. And me and Sally were just like, what is happening? Daddy wants to fuck.
Imagine if he did that.
Oh, man. He just brings out the fucking gas tank.
And he's like, my God.
This party started.
You know what happens in that building, right? What happens in that building? Daddy wants to fuck.
Okay, now I'm going to go in the closet.
I'm gonna hide in the trunk. Now what I want you to do.
Oh, God rest his soul. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with obsessions.
Yeah.
Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Mangione. I'm joined by Vin Forte. This is Obsessions. Vin, what are you currently obsessed with?
I am currently watching all the 90s Batman movies.
The Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher joints?
Oh, yeah.
And where are you on that journey?
I just finished Batman Forever.
How does that one hold up? Because everyone talks about the Burtons, and then everyone talks about how bad Batman and Robin is. But you don't hear that much about Batman Forever.
I love Batman Forever. I think it's great. I think it's a great mix. Like, if you were going to do the big budget version of, like, a campy Batman.
Yeah.
I think Batman Forever nails it, and then Batman Robin goes too far.
Can you give me an example of it nailing it? Like, what's something you like about that film?
Oh, I love Jim Carrey in it. I think he does a great Riddler.
Okay, okay.
I think that Val Kilmer plays a very, like, low-key Bruce Wayne.
Do you prefer Val Kilmer to George Clooney?
No, George Clooney, I think, is an excellent Bruce Wayne stuck in an awful movie.
Okay. How would you rank your Batman?
Ooh.
The actual men who play the role. I know, this is a tough question. We asked the tough questions here.
Exactly. I'm going to say, oh, God, that's tough. Because you got to take into account Bruce Wayne and Batman.
Yes, that's true. That is true. Some people excel at one part and not the other. I could tell you, I think that Christian Bale's my favorite Batman, but Michael Keaton's probably my favorite Bruce Wayne.
I would say that's pretty accurate. I would say, yeah, I would probably agree with that. Because I think Christian Bale's Batman really captures, like, the fact that he still uses a fake voice as Batman.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, a good touch. Like, I think he really gets into the role of Batman. And yeah. He's more casual as a Bruce Wayne.
His Bruce Wayne is just not even a real person. He's just Batman without the mask on.
Yeah, whereas I think in the Tim Burton movies, Michael Keaton has a lot more to do as Bruce Wayne.
Yes. Oh, well, there's that great fucking scene where you want to get nuts?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. What made you do this rewatch?
Honestly, because I was looking up, like, different supplementary material on YouTube from the movies. Like, mostly the soundtracks.
Oh, wow.
Like the Prince stuff in the first movie.
Oh, God.
Fucking yes. Party Man.
Ugh.
And then of course when you get to Batman Forever.
Yeah. Kiss from a Rose.
Batman! Like you got
that was one of those summer hits where it was just constantly on the radio.
Oh, you bet.
More memorable than the film, I think.
It certainly held up better as time goes on.
Yeah.
And then you have the song that whole soundtrack was wild.
Oh yeah,
like that had the song the rap the Riddler from Method Man.
Was that the one that had the U2 "Hold Me, Kill Me, Kiss Me, Thrill Me"?
That soundtrack, yes, it had U2's "Hold Me, Kill Me, Kiss Me, Thrill Me."
Yeah, that was a wild soundtrack.
Yeah, that was when like movie soundtracks could sort of stand on their own. Like licensed movie soundtracks?
Right. It was, yeah, exactly. Well, sometimes they would even have things that weren't even in the film. It was just songs inspired by.
Right. Like, you know what? Someone was bringing this up the other day that the Space Jam soundtrack is really good.
Okay. You've got what? Fly Like an Eagle, right?
Yeah. You've got the Space Jam rap. Version. You've got the R. Kelly version of that. But here's. Just looking up the Batman Forever, like the complete Batman Forever soundtrack. So you've got Kiss from a Rose, you've got Hold Me, Throw Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me. Listen to the fucking eclectic mix of artists on this soundtrack. You got U2, PJ Harvey, Brandy, Seal, Eddie Reader, Mazzy Star, The Offspring, Nick Cave, Method Man.
Whoa.
Michael Hutchins from NXS.
What did Method Man have on that soundtrack?
The Flaming Lips and Sunny Day Real Estate. He had the Riddler.
Oh, wait. You've talked about this before, the Riddler rap.
Yeah. Oh, it samples the 1960s Batman theme. It's great. It's a legitimately great song.
Yeah. I mean, that was back when, like, it was a... Soundtracks are kind of not a thing anymore. And, like, artists would be, like, commissioned to, like, hey, do you want to make a song for this film? And you got some really interesting shit.
Right.
Very cool. Yeah, good for you. I rewatched the first two a couple years ago, but I have not rewatched the Joel Schumacher ones in quite some time.
I think you might end up liking them.
I think I might have only seen Batman Forever once.
Mm.
Batman and Robin was a cable mainstay for a while. I feel like I've seen that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I need to revisit Batman.
Honestly, the most shocking thing about Batman and Robin when I rewatched it a while back was kind of how boring it is.
Yeah, it kind of sags a lot in the middle.
Well, because they try and get, like, oddly serious. Like,
yeah,
they make it very clear that, like, Alfred has cancer at one point.
Yeah, so weird.
And it's like, what a weird tonal shift from, like, I used to meet you.
Right.
Cool party, and it's like, oh, I have cancer.
Isn't Drew Barrymore in that movie?
Even better, Alicia Silverstone.
No, but I'm thinking, isn't Drew Barrymore, maybe she's in Forever. She plays like somebody's like goon in one of those movies.
Oh, yes, in Batman Forever. She's one of Tommy Lee Jones's goons.
Weird.
Because he has these two sugar and spice like hench women.
Sure, of course. One for each side of his face.
Yes.
Well, very cool. Very cool. Well, my obsession for this week is something we've been talking about all episode. It's a kind of double obsession. One is the Nintendo Switch, but the other would be a book I just read called Super Mario, How Nintendo Conquered America by Jeff Ryan. This book came out in 2011, and if you are a Nintendo fan or a video game history fan, it's a great read. It's not particularly well written. It's got a lot of corny jokes in it, and I don't blame the author. I blame whoever the editor was. But it's pretty well researched, and you'll like it if you care about the material. It's just the actual writing itself is not great. But if you want to hear the history of it's called How Nintendo Conquered America, but it actually talks about its entire history, even in Japan. And it's really interesting. So much stuff. There was stuff that I knew, but then stuff that I didn't know. There's constant peppering in of all these weird things. There was like a Super Mario Ice Capades where Mr. Belvedere played Koopa, which seriously, go YouTube Super Mario Ice Capades or Super Mario on Ice. And find Mr. Belvedere playing Koopa and, like, singing a song. It is as bonkers as you're imagining it. So many interesting things about it, which is, you know, the very first, the Famicom, or the NES as it was called here, was really innovative and a step forward for the whole industry. But after that, Nintendo was actually mostly known for being character and story driven and not being a sort of state-of-the-art leader in when it came to, like, graphics. You know, even, like, go back to Wii. We were just talking about how successful Wii was. Wii was a contemporary of, PS3. And PS3 was selling for so much money, and Wii, they like, slashed their price. So it was like, if you had to choose between the two, why wouldn't you get this pretty inexpensive little thing? Because you always know, no matter what it looks like, you always know Nintendo's going to be fun.
Well, that's the thing. That's what they bank on. They're like, well, you could get, especially because at a certain point, graphics almost don't matter.
Right.
Like, they're so good that, like, you know, if you came out of a game today that had the graphics of a GameCube game,
right,
I'd still be like, oh, that's pretty good. But going back to the original point.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's like you could get a PS3, especially at that time. PS3 made a huge tactical error and was selling their systems for like $699.
Right. It was crazy expensive.
It was insane because they had Blu-ray players in them too, which were also expensive at the time.
Right.
But Nintendo was like, I think the Wii was like $199, $299, something like that.
Both were hard to find.
Oh, I was working at Target when the Wii came out, and that we would get like two in and they would be gone immediately.
I was working at FYE. For your entertainment. And I remember when Xbox 3 came out, we had all the pre-orders, and we had to keep them in the back under lock and key. And we also had to escort people to their cars with it because, you know, like, we were afraid that people would be mugged and stuff. Because it was around Christmas, and, like, some little old grandma would come in, and we'd be like, oh, let us bring it to your car for you so you're not fucking pissed jacked in the fucking parking lot. Crazy stuff. But you're right about how, you know, you hit a kind of point where how much better can it get? Like, PS5's coming out, and how much better can that look from PS4? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not going to be a huge revolution in the way that it looks. And Nintendo has always focused on gameplay and fun. And that's what's awesome about Nintendo. That's also fun in the book, talking about all its weird misfires. Virtual Boy, which was meant to be a handheld system, but was too heavy, so it had to be, like, put on a table. So it essentially wasn't a handheld system.
Yeah, like, in the ads for it, you would see kids, like, laying back,
right,
like face up on like, a lawn playing it.
In Luigi's Mansion 3, there's a sort of in-joke about it, where there's this professor named E. Gads, and he has this little lab, and he's sort of guiding Luigi. And the way they communicate with each other is through, basically, it's a Virtual Boy, and Luigi takes out the Virtual Boy, looks through it, and everything is red in it, which is what one of the things with the original system was. I don't know why, but everything in the Virtual Boy was red. Like, the whole image was red. It was, so it's sort of like a fun making fun of that. And yeah. I guess another really interesting part of the book is how much it talks about Game Boy and how revolutionary that was. But also that was, like, in terms of graphics, the Game Boy was well behind
the Game Gear.
Game Gear and
Atari had the Atari Lynx that they tried Lynx, coming right out with.
Those all had much better graphics, but less good games. Less comfortable to actually hold. They ate up batteries too fast. You know, the Game Boy had that sort of greenish field, but it was a fucking killer. It was great.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to the games. Like, it was all about the games.
There's also, early on, Nintendo had a really successful series called Game & Watch, which they're actually bringing back the Game & Watch this year as a sort of celebration of that series. And they were called Game & Watch because, I guess the best way to describe it is, if you remember the Tiger games, like, there was a Little Mermaid, and, like, there would just be one game. That was the Nintendo Game & Watch. But you could also set it so it could be a clock, the Game & Watch. It's very interesting stuff. Go and Google it.
Yeah, Google that. The Tiger Electronic games, were there any actual good ones?
Gosh, I can't remember any being very good.
Like, remember, you'd sort of, like, take it on, like, a long car ride and be and, like, try and convince yourself that, like, okay, this is fun. Like, this is better than nothing.
I mean, it certainly was better than nothing. I'm sure there are people out there that collect them too. That's the perfect kind of kitschy thing to collect. So that's my obsession. So Vin, we did it. By George, we did it.
We did it. It's done. It's in the books.
Yes.
Ship it off to the Library of Congress.
Yes. Go dig yourself up a Game Boy and play some Tetris.
Oh yeah. Go play some God, I'm on such a puzzle game kick. I'd love me some Tetris.
Some Dr. Mario.
Dr. Mario. I still say my favorite is probably, it's called Puzzle League in America, but in Japan it's called Panel Dupon.
I don't know if I've played that, Puzzle League.
Yeah, you probably have. It's kind of what, like, Bejeweled is. Like, you know, you have to sort of, destroy, make different combos of blocks and destroy them.
I probably have played it. This has been PCMC. I'm Mike Maggiore. I'm joined by Vin Forte. We end every episode by saying, go bye-bye.